It's a real honor to be here, and I have some things to share with you today. Think of this as kind of a CNN news rollout for about 10 minutes or less. Somebody raise their hand when 10 minutes have gone by. My time will be up, and I'll get off stage. We got a lot of really good speakers today, so I want to hear from everybody. Anyway, Burl, where are you? Thanks again for getting me organized, and I got the clicker. Thanks again. And Burl pointed out that I wasn't here in the audit committee because I had brought my tax return on my thumb drive and instead of my presentation, so we got that straightened out. So we are back in business as we speak. Anyway, I want to answer three things today, really simply. Why here? Why College Station in this area? Why? What's going on now and what next? And these are kind of important issues, I think, that we can tie together with this crowd, and I think we'll have some pretty good dialogue to come. But let me tell you, back about 3 or 4 years ago, when Brett Gerard, our president of Health Science Center, put together the notion that we could bring biotechnology in large scale back to College Station, Bryan, College Station area, it was considered to be somewhat impossible, perhaps a pipe dream, and that what he had banked on was that we had entered an era of history where team science was important for progress in biotechnology, and over the next 20 years, biotechnology would be an important driver in economies, development, healthcare, and so forth. He made that bet. We competed, and we successfully won the contract with the federal government to put the Center for Vaccine and Medical Countermeasures Development in the Bryan College Station area. Now, we are one of three. We were the only academic area. But if you think about the raison d'etre, why we did that, and team science and why that's important, is that you can't develop anything from an idea on a bench to a vaccine that goes in people's arms unless you have the engineers, the physicists, the chemists, the Health Science Center activities. And what you needed for the cat's meow was a institution that was strong in engineering and strong in health sciences to pull this off. The private sector can't have a huge university just sitting around with all the talent to help plug the gap when a new product comes to market or a new technology needs to be developed and so forth. So that the bet was that we would be the place. We won the contract. The rest is history. So I want to give you a little update why here and sort of where we are. We are in about 50% finished with three buildings. We've finished one. We are operational. The second one, we are half done, and the third one will break ground this month to develop a vaccine and medical countermeasures therapeutics complex that'll be unparalleled in its flexibility nationwide and perhaps worldwide. It'll get us certainly on the map. And if you look at the schools that we compete with, Cal Poly, MIT, and other technology-intensive schools, we're the only one with a strong health science center and a strong health community around. It really gives us a competitive advantage. We think this is important. We believe that over the next 20 years of this federal contract and institution that we've built, that we'll be doing approximately $2 billion worth of business. We think that every dollar we bring in science, high science, vaccinology and so forth, percolates through the economy and has residual effect as it moves through and lifts the boat for everybody in terms of science and technology. So I think it's a really strong play, and I'm proud to be part of that. So that's why here, that's why we won, and that's what we are. And a lot of people in this room were party and helped be responsible for winning that contract because it was the infrastructure, it was the participation, it was the community, it was the strength of our community in science and educational system that really put us on the map. This is a way of the future in terms of private-public consortiums and so forth. And we're in the center, so things are going well. Second issue, let me move along here and say, why now? Let me just take a look here and just, I'm a recovered disease detective from CDC. And, I still have that sort of emblem on me, but I'm now a tried and true academic, and I spend half my time teaching, half my time in research around the vaccine development activities. But take a scene here, because this depicts why now. And this is just one example. This is Ebola. These are patients and people in Liberia waiting for treatment. The healthcare facility is far in the distance. They're waiting deep into the night. for therapy, for treatment, for a disease for which we have no effective vaccine right now, and we have no approved medication. We have some experimental drugs and vaccines floating around, but we have no scale, no proven ability, and no licensed product to put towards this. So in essence, here we are doing what I call tailgate medicine. We can't get ahead of the epidemic and put internal body armor in terms of developing, giving people vaccines to develop antibodies, because we don't have one yet. And this is just one of many diseases that are happening. Just case in point, then, I want you to think about this, that this epidemic started a year ago. It started in December, as best we can tell, of last year. So this has been bumbling around for a year. So that if you want to get ahead of a vaccine, like we did for polio, influenza, and so forth, in terms of a disease, you're going to need an effective vaccine in your armamentarium. I'm proud to say that we are working on developing plans, transitioning candidate vaccines and medications right here to College Station. And with a little luck over the next few months, we'll be nailing those down, and those will be produced here locally. So here we go, Liberia. Just a case in point, not only do we have medical countermeasures, vaccines, therapeutics, and so forth, and preparedness, but we have issues related to protective equipment, training of volunteers, and so forth. While you might think this is an international problem, think about it in terms of Ebola. Many of us in this room have been doing Ebola now for about 8 weeks in Texas. I didn't have to go overseas this time. It's the first time I didn't have to go out. Usually if I show up in your neighborhood, it's really a bad sign, because I do exotic diseases. Here in Texas, it certainly challenged our emergency management. And my colleague here will talk more about the preparedness and the response at the ground level. I want to highlight here just the Texas Task Force on Infectious Disease. It's AKA the Red Tie Club. We didn't coordinate that day, although it looks like it. Led by Dr. Brett Girard, to integrate across sectors, boundaries, and so forth rapidly during the Ebola response. Our task force report will be out later this week, but it dealt with issues of jurisdiction, experimental medicine, hospital infection control, and so forth. And I'm proud to say Texas is well ahead of the pack in terms of preparedness and response for this area. What next? So we talked about why here, why now, and what next. I just use Ebola because it's one of many, many diseases that we face and we need medical countermeasures for. But around the corner, we have enterovirus D68. A respiratory disease that's affecting children, particularly those with asthma. We have to stay vigilant. It's nowhere near the seriousness of Ebola, but it's something we watch and are interested in terms of having effective countermeasures for that too in the future. Polio, largely eradicated in this country. We no longer immunize people. However, with civil wars and brewing in places like Iraq, Syria, problems in Nigeria and Afghanistan, we have a resurgence of polio. Now, the sad thing about that is that if that causes refugees, they move around the world, countries start having polio cases, we'll have to re-immunize children again. That's a huge health security issue for us. So vigilant for that, we may be back in the polio business if things change. And, of course, chikungunya virus, a.k.a. my farmer friend, the chicken virus. No, it's a insect-borne a virus that is transmitted through mosquito bites. It's rampant in the Caribbean, and it's being intermittently introduced into the United States. So that over the past 20 or 30 years, we've had maybe 20 or 30 emerging diseases that we've had to deal with, so that in this world of international travel, rapid movement of people, we are certainly vigilant and always trying to stay one step ahead of the next countermeasure. So let me wrap this up and say that we at Texas A&M Health Science Center have rolled up our sleeves. Our ABLE team here works day and night on issues related to transitioning the cutting-edge medicines and vaccines right here in College Station. And with the help of many people in this room, I think we're going to have a bright future. Thank you.